But we begin today, 1 year from now. We might be doing this show from the new Eskenazi Health Hospital on West 10th Street on the campus of IUPUI, right between Riley, between the new Riley Hospital and the VA Hospital. That's where Eskenazi is. They're working hard. The roof is on. They're doing the inside work. Later this year, all the medical equipment will show up. Which makes all the medical equipment people happy because, like, my goodness, hey, they opened a new hospital. To kind of give everybody an update on Wishart and the new Sydney and Lois Eskenazi Hospital, et cetera, in the house is the head of the Health and Hospital Corporation of Marion County, Matt Gutwein, the chief medical officer of Wishart Eskenazi, Dr. Lisa Harris, and Vice President Greg Porter, who the legislature allowed him off his day job this time of year, where normally he deals with education. He ain't dealing with education no more. He's the Democratic lead on the House Ways and Means Committee, and he's trying to find the new governor some money because the cupboard is Mike gonna be surprised when he takes the oath and find ain't nothing in the Mitch left him nothing in the cupboard. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Let's begin with the. A year from now, is there a projected opening date, assuming we have, like, little or no snow and stuff, Matt?
Well, thank you for having us today, Amos. And, yes, there is. It's not a projected date. It's the date that it will happen. Okay. So on December 9th.
December 9th.
2013 at 8 a.m., we are open for business, and all new patients will go to the brand-new facility, the Sydney and Lois Eskenazi Hospital. And it'll be a great day for our patients and for our community.
Now, this thing is on, obviously, if you've set the date, it's on time.
We are on time and on budget.
Under or on?
Well, we still got a couple months to go, but we're very, very good about where we are with the budget. We're right on budget, and we're going to land it on budget.
How much of the – at what point or when you build a hospital does the – does the building part stop and you've got all these empty rooms and then the equipment has to come in? Obviously, the equipment is the last thing to come in because you want all the walls painted and everything up and the electricity there and the wiring, whatever. How long does it take to bring all the beds and the equipment and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So it turns out that the actual construction is going to be done in May.
In May.
And a lot of the equipment – the really heavy equipment, like the big CAT scans and mm-hmm. the MRI, so those will be in too, and then we'll start putting in the beds and the carts and the furniture and the supplies, and then the actual hospital and all the hard construction, we'll do some stuff in the exteriors, you know, the landscaping and the roads and all that stuff, but the actual buildings will be done in May, and then June, July, August, and September, we'll be training our staff at that building. So we'll be bringing waves of employees, doctors, nurses, therapists, to go over there and really learn how to use the hospital and become very comfortable in those new surroundings. And so the several months of hardcore training.
I was gonna ask Dr. Lisa Harris, this is not like you move into a house or you move – into a new office space where, you know, the moving people move your stuff, they put it in the new situation, or the movers put it in the room, and then you just go in and do that. The medical staff, you know, everyone from the doctors and the nurses and the techs and the people that give you the gas when you'd have the operation down to the maintenance staff, they've got to learn this facility backwards and forwards.
You're exactly right, and let me add my thanks to mm-hmm. Having us on your show this afternoon. We're obviously very excited about this project. And the staff engagement started at the very inception.
Right.
So the physicians, the nurses, our patients actually informed the design of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So it started way back when the architects can tell us, you know, what the dimensions of a modern shock trauma room should be.
Right.
But the architects don't care for patients. So it's our staff who, within that configuration, came in and actually rehearsed and went through the drill of resuscitating a critically injured patient and informed the design, said, you know, the rooms need to be longer and narrower because all the action's at the head of the bed. So it started there. but it has continued. And so the so after hundreds of staff and patient informed what the building will actually look like and how it will function, now we're in the process of planning whole new ways of delivering care. So, for example, we're moving from a newborn intensive care unit where all the bassinets are in an oval on the outside, the perimeter of a room, and the nursing station is in the middle, to a newborn intensive care unit where every child has a private room. So every infant and their families will have a private room. That dramatically changes the way that nurses will work in that setting. So our same that same staff have been planning processes. They've gone through and they've mapped out exactly how they're going to function.
How do you practice, though, with no patients?
Well, what we go through the drills, we think about every single step of the process. And actually, some of it does involve patient simulations and getting patients' input so that patients can tell us, can use this opportunity to tell us what would be better from their perspective in terms of the way that we deliver care. So that's been the activity of the last several months, and it has generated over 50 manuals about how we're going to do very specific tasks. So we're not leaving anything to chance.
How will the emergency room experience change in the new Eskenazi Health? Because a lot of people that are listening now, they intersect Wishart in the emergency room. And or that whole emergency room process, and the feedback has been, y'all have heard it, overcrowded, you know, folk don't treat you, you know, they snarl at you. There's a lot, if you go at the wrong time, it's a gazillion people there. If you go at the right time, there's only, you know, there's like one or two there, and that's rare. So how is this changing in terms of the emergency room experience?
Well, thank you. You're exactly right that the emergency department is where lots of our community meet Wishart, and that's their primary engagement. And the short answer is that all the rooms in the emergency department will be private rooms as well. And
so none of the little curtain things?
No, all private rooms. And
University of Chicago Hospital didn't even have that. new monstrosity they're building when I was up there this summer.
And that's another situation where we're also not waiting for this new facility to make critical changes. So we've had an initiative over the last several months where we have reduced the waiting time in our emergency department from the time that someone comes and registers to seeing a physician. Used to be about 2.5 hours. It's about 30 minutes now.
How'd you cut it down?
So we worked on changing the process, changing the flow, bringing people back, keeping people moving through the emergency department. Instead of everybody just sitting out in the waiting room, we bring them in. We have sub waiting areas within the emergency department that are designed for the new hospital. So in the new hospital, we actually have physically separate areas within the emergency department.
Is there going to be like a separate part of the emergency room area that deals with extreme trauma? You're a level one trauma hospital, and so sometimes you might be in there for an emergency stomach ache, and all of a sudden here comes a mass casualty situation.
Exactly, and so not only do we have that physically separate trauma area within the emergency, but we have transportation routes and elevators that are dedicated to taking patients from the helipad on the roof right to the trauma areas and then right to the operating rooms.
Wait a minute. There's going to be a helipad in the new Eskenazi?
Yes.
Because you don't have one now.
It's not safe next to the VA.
Oh, it's on the ground.
It required an extra.
You're going to have one on the roof like Clarion.
Step.
Like IU.
Yes.
You're going to have extra traffic controllers trying to figure out where the helicopter's going. How does that help? Because that would allow patients to come faster in a trauma one situation.
Time is of the essence, and so this reduces the time. Right now, we have a situation where we're sharing elevators for multiple purposes. Now we have a completely dedicated, elevator banks just for trauma patients. So it reduces any unnecessary delays. It's also the case that we have throughout the hospital, we're having separate elevators for patients and families and separate elevators for staff. So that we can.
Now that's different. I'm trying to compare my experience, you know, earlier this year with my dad at the University of Chicago Hospitals, which I thought was a big fancy hospital until I learned it was not a trauma center, which kind of says, wait a minute, University of Chicago, big, prestigious, they're not a trauma center? What's wrong with that? I said, we got two or three. We got two. Anyway, so I was bragging on y'all with the people. They didn't like that. And I did not see, you know, separate elevators that everybody was sharing it. But in the new Eskenazi, it's like patient elevator staff.
Right. So a complete separation, front of the house, back of the house.
Okay.
So that
a visitor doesn't need to see a patient.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. And we can move supplies, right. Move materials, move the staff with one set of elevators, and then the patients and their families will always have the prime elevators. And so we can be much more efficient and much safer for infection control, disease control, and the convenience of the families and the patients.
Respecting privacy.
239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoon's name is Greg Porter, since you're now dealing with money and stuff now. Jim, I'm trying to give you practice to deal with the state budget. This project is on time. How have those goals for minority and women business enterprises being involved in the new Eskenazi Hospital?
Thus far, Amos, thank you for having us on again to give our yearly update, our 6-month update. Thus far, our minority participation of our $754 million hospital has been about $92 million, which is about 17% in that. So, which is, and overall, with professional services, we're running around about 30% of that participation. That's been totally our goal, to have individuals included from professional engineers to architects, all the way to people doing general conditions packages.
And out of the total construction contracts, 10% straight up went to African American contractors.
Yes.
$53 million.
Exactly.
That's more than a dollar and a quarter.
Yeah, it really is. And so we're looking at about, you know, about 10.8%, and about $53 million, about 53.5%. Almost $5 million have gone to minority contractors.
One of the other things that I understand the new hospital is doing, because hospital walls are just kind of ugly looking, you guys are going to have artwork, and you've got how many artists are involved? Where will the artwork be? Will it just be in the public area, just in the lobby? Will it be on patient floors, in the ICU, in the elevators? Where's the art going to be?
That's where you named it. It's going to be in all those places.
All those places.
It's going to be in the elevator, in the ICU, on the walls. You know, we talk about like the art of healing, and you know, believe it. You know, art and nice pictures and art pieces are good for the healing of our patients, or all patients. So we've exceeded some of the targets in regards to our diverse, in regards to artists. A lot of people don't know we have a lot of minority artists out there in the community.
Right.
And what we've done was we have about and of the artists, around about 62% of those artists are from the state of Indiana, and about 50% of those are minority artists. So we're very excited about that, and about 43% of that is African American artists. So that is, you know, and we have another.
Is it mostly painting, or is it going to be a variety of things? Painting, sculpture, stuff in glass things, so people can't break the glass and get it out. Different kinds of stuff.
It's going to be all the above. Artists. And all that, you know. So, it's like I said, if it's in patients' rooms, in the waiting areas, as well as in the elevator, you know, so it's going to be all type of art. So we're very excited about that.
There's a local artist, local African-American artist, that does spoken word art, poetry, and we're going to have that available on the televisions in all the patient rooms. So this is an artist named Alan Imagery, and he does very inspiring and hopeful and optimistic messages, and so we're going to have that available for our patients when they're lying in their bed. Instead of having to watch some soap opera, they can see this great, inspiring, beautiful work by some of our local artists.
And so I can also assume that since this is a new hospital, and so this is an opportunity to upgrade the TV sets, so these will be the digital TV sets instead of the old-fashioned, big, clunky, analog TV sets, which takes up less space in a room.
Exactly.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Names with Matt Gutwein, head of Health and Hospital Corporation, Greg Porter from Health and Hospital Corporation, Dr. Lisa Harris, the medical director of Wishart and Eskenazi. This facility will open just as the health care law is literally a couple of weeks from taking effect. How much of the planning is Wishart Eskenazi going to have to do next year to get ready for the full implementation of the healthcare law? Y'all got to learn, lower the prices, do some other kind of things.
Well, we've been really planning for years for that. In fact, we've been planning for the kinds of things that are going on with the healthcare future, maybe even 20 and 30 years ago. So a large part of what we do mm-hmm. is not inside the hospital, but out in the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. out in our community healthcare centers, where we offer primary care, preventive care, mental health services in neighborhood clinics. And we are moving to a model that's called a medical home model. And that's some buzzwords. But what it really says is that in a clinic in your community, right. we're going to wrap ourselves around you completely and provide sort of the full array of care for you in one-stop shopping. And we already have 10 community health care centers right now and another 26 sites out there for mental health. But we're opening up, actually before the new hospital opens, a brand new community mental health center at 38th and Mola Road. It will be our largest center.
Primary care center.
It'll be the largest one we have to date. 70,000
square feet. Oh, where the grocery store used to be.
Actually,
at 38th and Mola.
It's exactly where Circuit City used to be.
It's the Circuit City place.
Because right. we have repurposed that old concrete box. So the guts of it is the old Circuit City around which we have built another 35,000 square feet. The entire square footage is 70,000 square feet, so it'll be by about twice as large.
A 70,000 square center. Foot health center, 38th and Mola. Let me go to Morris at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, you kind of addressed what I was just calling about. Will then the crisis intervention unit, the respite care, all be moved from the old Wishart to this new facility at 38th and Mola, or will there be any midtown presence at Eskenazi?
Volume up a little bit high. We will have the crisis intervention and the triage and inpatient psychiatry on the hospital campus. We are moving the respite center into the community because that is the model.
Now, what's a respite center in case people don't know?
That's more of a model when people need a little bit, just an opportunity to kind of decompress, sort of get out of potentially crisis. They're not quite in crisis yet, but they just need right. They need a little bit extra care, a little more support, the opportunity to get out of maybe a chaotic milieu and have a moment of respite. But our notion, the Margie Payne and other leaders within Midtown have a vision that is shared across the country for keeping people who struggle with mental health concerns more engaged and living in the community. So this keeps people anchored in the community as opposed to in those situations having them come into the hospital environment and be more likely maybe to deteriorate further. It works to keep them engaged, keep them functioning and living independently.
Morris, I appreciate you bringing that up because I was going to bring up something similar to that. I had several calls in the last few days on the air and off the air raising Dr. Harris' mental health in the wake of Newtown. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing from you is it that we have mental health services here in Indianapolis and Marion County and the community either A, is not aware of them, or B, the insurance they carry doesn't carry them? Because, again, there's this perception that those of our residents in Indianapolis who have mental health issues or mental health concerns, maybe they don't know they have it. Maybe the family members kind of suspect. There's this perception that we don't have these services here, or if they're here, it's only available for the wealthy or those that have these humongous health care plans.
Well, I think what's remarkable, and this is why it's so great that we have the opportunity to be here today and talk about mm-hmm. these things, because it is the case that I think Indianapolis has more resources than many communities. Midtown is one of the largest, you know, Midtown, which is a division of Wishart, is right. one of the largest community mental health centers in the country, seeing over 600,000 visits annually. Matt talked about all the dedicated sites we have for mental health. But to get to your point about making that care accessible and reducing barriers, perhaps reducing a stigma that can be associated with mental health, we've embedded mental health care in all of our primary care centers. Mm-hmm. So in any of our community primary care centers, you can get the full range of primary care. You can get treatment for your diabetes, for your high blood pressure, for your heart failure, and for your depression, or for your struggles with substance abuse or other mental illnesses. And so what we're doing is to Matt's point about the medical home, we're right. saying that we provide all those services where patients need us to be, and to reduce the complexity, make it easier for them to receive those services. They don't have to go to another site to receive mental health services.
It's about access.
So is this something where, as the country debates, what do we do after Newtown? And obviously there's going to be a weapons regulatory piece that respects the Second Amendment, that respects the responsible gun owners in this country, but tries to crack down not only to keep illegal weapons away and heavy weapons away from A, criminals, and B, people who may have some mental issues. Is it that medical facilities like Eskenazi Wishart are going to have to be part of that conversation with your brother and sister institutions across the country? Because there may be some best practices that the country can learn from?
Absolutely. And I think some of that has already started. We already have partnership where Midtown has been involved in crisis intervention training mm-hmm. for all, you know, for folks within public safety, for the police, for IUPUI and Butler and other of the safety organizations within Indianapolis. So there's already those ties. One other program that we have that is also exists in San Francisco and Baltimore and some other large cities, we call it our Project Prescription for Hope, that recognizes violence as a chronic disease. Speaking to our model of prevention and early intervention, we recognize that it has risk factors, it has, right. you know, teachable moments, it has opportunities to intervene. So we have a program that works with victims of violence, right. of folks who arrive at our trauma center having been shot or stabbed, where we work with them, with right. their families, helping their whole social networks right. to get them on a different path. And we actually have reduced violence recidivism from over 30% to less than 1%, meaning
for people that have gone through that program.
Exactly. And so that's first of all, better for those individuals. I mean, some of these kids previously would be coming to our shock room repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Again, more than 30% would have a recurrent, would come back, and again, a victim of violence within 2 years, less than 1% now. Some of those individuals are in college now.
Right.
So it's addressing that some of the root causes right. of the chronic violence and reversing right. the trend.
Yeah, Greg.
Yeah, this is also a public health issue, our conversation. If we had these conversations, Amos, this national conversation, international conversation, we have to understand that the violence that's been hitting our communities, it is a public health issue. And Dr. Kane and I have been talking along with Dr. Harris and Matt about what are we going to do and what kind of dialogues. Are we going to continue to look at trigger locks and what can we do to continue to educate people about guns and why we need certain type of guns in our community? And the bottom line is, as it was our Prescription for Hope, we realize that we attacked it is a public health issue.
Should there also be reaching out to the NRA and say, okay, you're always talking about educating kids about the responsible use of firearms. We're here wanting to educate the community. Is it time to, for instead of us fighting and arguing and cussing each other out, to start working together? Respect them, they respect us.
The time has come, the time has passed mm-hmm. for people to come together and understand what is happening within our community. even, you know, with in Newtown, what happened there, and with the mother and et cetera. So, you know, we know that we're asses. We know that we're asses. Therefore, what are we going to do as a community and as a nation to move forward and embrace each other's philosophy and move forward to protect our children and ourselves?
Let me go to Georgia right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Brown?
Fine.
I remember back when King Roe Conley spearheaded the referendum to get the new hospital built, and he was playing that song down there about your old wagon, but you done broke down. But anyway, and King Road don't have to pay me for that.
Okay.
But anyway, I want to ask a question. My granddaughter is interested in becoming a nurse. Will you have any kind of classes or anything over there? And I'll hang up and listen.
We actually have a relationship with the IU School of Nursing. We have multiple opportunities for nurses in training at every step along the way. We actually just celebrated 50 nurses who had gone through a special training program to advance their clinical excellence for nurses who are focused on providing care at the bedside. So I would be happy to put you in touch with our chief nursing officer, who is very focused. We are a learning institution. You know, we are in partnership with the IU School of Medicine, Purdue School of Pharmacy, School of Nursing, 40 other health-related professions come to get their clinical training at Wishard. So absolutely, we would be very happy to help your granddaughter as she plans for a very rewarding career in a noble profession.
I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Anthony's name. So what happens to the old building?
When we started this process, the space where the new building is being built was owned by Indiana University.
Right.
That's where the old LaRue Carter was, right. The old State Department of Health, the old Union Building.
Mm-hmm.
So we negotiated a land swap mm-hmm. with Indiana University. And so they gave us their land. We were building the new Eskenazi Health. And then when we move in, Indiana University will own the current Wishard.
Okay.
And so it will really be up to them to decide what they want to do with it. They've developed a master plan, and they are going to use that space to build new medical research buildings, good life sciences buildings, good economic development buildings. You know, it's a nice piece of property. It's really the corner lot there.
Right.
And but it just wasn't nice for us because we couldn't replace ourselves
on
site. Now,
they're building new streets around the new Eskenazi Hospital. Will Indigo drop people off at the door, or are people going to have to walk?
No. We're building a couple new streets that are going to be great for our patients. So where the new Wishard is being built, there was going to be a brand new street right in front
mm-hmm.
that goes right there to the front door, and that's where Indigo will be.
Okay.
And we're going to have a really nice bus stop there. And then we've also built a new street that already exists in the back of where the new Wishard is. And the reason why that's important is because all of our staff and all of our deliveries and all of the ambulance runs, all
right.
the back of the house stuff, we'll use that back road. So that way we're not in competition with our patients who will be using that front road.
So the ambulance have a special way to get to where to do what they got to do.
Exactly.
Let me go back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello, Amos.
Hi.
Hello, how are you doing today, sir?
Fine. What's up?
Yeah, I'm very, very impressed with your guest and with the hospital. I have one question in terms of the training process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an extra education trainer, and my concern is if we will have the staff on hand to address the new technology in terms of electronic health records. In the past, the nurses and staff have been shying away from that because they were not used to computers. Will the current staff be able to use the technology in the hospital to deal with the new electronic health records now?
All right. They going to know how to get the record off an iPhone or something here? Doc?
Well, I thank you so much for that question. That actually is our legacy in health information technology is something which we're very proud. Wishard actually has had an electronic medical record for over 40 years. It was developed in partnership with the Regenstrief Institute and Wishard. So we have had a long history of actually leading the field and being the site of the innovations that have informed much of the design of of health information systems that have followed. Our nurses, they aren't passive users of the system. They actually are participant architects of the system. So we actually have we have nurse informaticians who have been part of the development all along and are now in the process of taking our whole platform to the next level, or with our plan to have all that done well in advance of our move to the new facility, so that, again, leaving nothing to chance, planning ahead, we have all that installed before we actually make the physical move.
Kevin will be our last caller with the folks from Wishart and the new Eskenazi opening December 9th, 2013. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Brown?
I'm fine.
All right, how you doing, panel? I was just calling to say, I know we had Christmas Addicts Medical Magnet just up the street from you guys. Will you guys be partnering with them at all?
Ah.
Yes. Well, I know for a fact that the Medical Magnet School, from the education perspective, are taking classes over there at Indiana University right now. In our discussion with the community, as a matter of fact, I think maybe today I'm going to a ribbon cutting ceremony at Christmas Addicts, and with that is we've had discussions with some of the alumni on how we can potentially partner together. We have to keep a pipeline open, Amy.
Well, is it
a problem because these are high school, middle school and high school kids, and you can't have them around certain medical things?
No, they're actually very much
in
part of the programs. And to the pipeline that Greg's describing is our long-term partnership with the Center for Leadership Development, where we actually have students. In fact, we'll be getting ready to launch this again. It's always around the time of Martin Luther King Day in January, that we bring. It started out, it was about 40, 50, now it's 50, 60, it's over 70 students and their parents who are immersed in all the programs of Wishart for a, you know, like 12, 14 week program that gets them, helps them see what careers are possible in the array of medical professions and helps feed into the magnet school. Then ultimately, hopefully, the School of Medicine, School of Nursing, all the health-related professions.
One final question. When my dad was ill, the only cafeteria they had in the University of Chicago Hospital was healthy food. Could not buy no junk food anywhere in that hospital. So in the new Eskenazi Health, is the snack bar, the food available for the public, is that healthy only?
We are moving rapidly in that direction. We're very excited about our new food services, and we are going to offer this full array of healthy options. In fact, we're actually growing vegetables on the roof of our clinic building, and we're going to serve those vegetables in our cafeteria.
Wait. You going to grow vegetables on the top of the building?
Yes.
It won't get hurt by the helicopter.
No.
And then you're going to use the vegetables in the food.
That's
exactly.
It, Amos.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. I see that could be teaching, you know, some high school kids agriculture,
that's right.
Agronomy,
that's
and all that stuff. There's the report from the folks at Wishart Eskenazi. The new Eskenazi Hospital will open. He said this. So if it doesn't open, we got it on digital here. December 9th, 2013, which I don't even think I have a new calendar.
It's a Monday.
It's a Monday. Maybe we're broadcasting. Maybe we're there that Monday.
We'd love to have you.
Greg Porter, Dr. Lisa Harris, Matt Gutwein with Wishart and Eskenazi. Guys, thanks very much. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy New Year to you.